Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee karup, guten tag, ciao, weevi, va, ketbang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace, how, go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated, that's right, labeling lost again in the state of Washington as it lost in California, so you have no right to know what you're putting in your body. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated, McNugget Pharmaceutical, Vivisection Prison, Kilitary Industrial Core, poor nation. In the cheese-covered, post-constitutional, bankster-bankrupt, corruptocracy, mockracy, idiocracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, foodborne in the USA, home of Uncle Salmonella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, ooh, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden and, TNA wrestling superstar Austin Aries said on this program last week. And, if you've seen TNA Impact on Spike TV on Thursday nights, you know he is known as the greatest man that ever lived. And last week on this program, the all seriousness of the professional wrestling environment interview that we had, he called me the greatest broadcaster who ever lived. Now, I'm too humble and shy to be so egomaniacal as to repeat such a claim as Austin Aries saying that I am the greatest broadcaster who ever lived. Did I say I was too shy to repeat that? What was it I was not going to repeat that I was? And I won't repeat it, however true it might be. Now, what about Walter Cronkite or Howard Cosell or Edward R. Murrow or Larry King or Geraldo, huh? Or Cokie Roberts or Tom Hartman or Alex Jones or Mike Malloy, huh? Well, none of them ever hosted a vegan show, so, none of them were ever in a position to save the world. No ego here, right? And, Mike Malloy, I'm sorry, I cannot listen to your program anymore. We talked about your speciesist language over the past and calling people, whom you wanted to criticize, snake, rat, pig, whatever. The speciesist language was bad enough, but now Mike Malloy has admitted on his radio program, even though he laments all of the gun violence in the world whenever somebody goes crazy in a school or on a street or whatever, Mike Malloy is all upset about the NRA and the availability of guns, yet it turns out that he has a gun himself, and for fun, he goes to the city dump to shoot innocent rats. So that's fun for Mike Malloy. Shooting the innocent. I mean, that's what he's complained about over the years, all the wars, all the innocents dying. And for fun, he goes and, makes a baby rat motherless or, it just really makes no sense. I don't understand that. But and it's called plinking. There's even a word in the dictionary for random target practice, as Mike Malloy does. He plinks. So plink to me is the sound of my radio going off and not listening to Mike Malloy anymore. We enjoyed our times together, right? I mean, we were both on Air America at the same time, and we talked. We did a talk at Yoshi's in San Francisco. I opened that night. There were death threats against Mike Malloy, so I made sure the people knew the difference. Like how he looks and I look. The difference. So anyway, but he says keep it lit, but the light is off. The radio is off. I cannot listen. I can't listen to a plinker. Okay. especially since now I am the greatest broadcaster who ever lived. I'll put that plaque up next to my Shining World Hero Award from the Supreme Master Qinghai Association. No, none of this is going to my head. I am your humble servant, you know, right here, just Shining World Hero, greatest broadcaster who ever lived. So, holy cow, that means that this radio program is the greatest, most important show ever. So, I better get to work saving the planet, right? You know, especially because another climate change conference starts tomorrow in Warsaw. And, you know, I have to say, unless attendees come to an agreement that there needs to be a worldwide vegan movement, I'm afraid that this climate conference also will turn out to be, a Polish joke. And Polish jokes are always in bad taste. In bad taste as much as Polish sausage would be at a climate conference. How often do we have an opportunity to do Polish jokes on this show? Okay, so how many... let's do some Polish jokes, okay? How many environmentalists in Warsaw would it take to eat meat and dairy and still be an environmentalist? None. Of course, you got that right. I think the punchline is that, you know, one cannot be a meat and dairy consuming environmentalist. Okay, so obviously none of this will help me get a job writing for Leno or Conan or whatever, but another Polish joke? Okay. A meat-eating environmentalist, a dairy-drinking environmentalist, and a vegan go into a bar in Warsaw and ask to be seated. The maitre d' says, sorry, no tables for one. Okay, all right. I need a laugh track. I need a laugh track, okay? Daisy, what do you think? Ah, she's just looking at me, too. She gets it, though. As it turns out, that going vegan, you going vegan, you convincing everybody else you know to go vegan, it's the only practical solution to climate change. Now, you've heard me discuss on this program over the years a study by Robert Goodland and Jeff Anhang, the authors of Livestock and Climate Change for the World Bank, World Watch Institute, United Nations. Okay, so what they are saying is that we immediately have to shift 25% immediately from animal agriculture, so-called products, to vegan products, because it turns out that land-based animal agriculture is responsible for at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions. That figure is staggering because whatever you do, you know, that causes climate change, none of it adds up to equal what animal agriculture is responsible for doing. At least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions. So what we can do is stop eating products of animal agriculture. We produce the animals as if they're, you know, in a factory, as if they're automobiles, you know, artificial insemination, just churning them out. We can stop. We can go vegan, or we can attempt to change our entire infrastructure, which will take, 20 years, $18 trillion. So which is easier, for you to go vegan to save the planet, or for you to convince all your friends to go vegan and save the planet, or have climate change conferences where we sing, I guess this time, 350.org will have children singing in Polish that, we better do something, we better do something soon. When I talk about these 51%, at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions, I'm always challenged by people who say that the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, put out figures that represented 18%. So we have 18% versus at least 51%. Well, Food and Agriculture Organization actually does promote meat. You know, it's part of this worldwide livestock sector conspiracy, really, to meet a 70% increase in demand for animal agriculture products by 2050 as human population soars to 9 billion. And FAO is influenced by animal agriculture. It's actually lowering its estimate because animal agriculture would prefer that it do that, and it's going to come out with figures that say, no, not 18% of greenhouse gas emissions, but more like, I think, about 14.5%. Well, also, we seem to be very preoccupied with coal. And coal has been estimated to be responsible for approximately 22% of greenhouse gas emissions. So double that figure plus some, and you have the responsibility of animal agriculture, which then becomes our responsibility if we eat the products of animal agriculture. So looking at... And by the way, I invited Robert Goodland to be on the program, and we hope to make that happen. Could be as early as next week, depending upon his travel schedule, because I think it's really important that we look at what's often overlooked. And you know, so if we look at what happened with the UN FAO report. Some of the things that were overlooked, for example, specifically, the FAO was basing its estimates on 2002 figures instead of what was reflecting the growth of animal agriculture. And it was using figures that went back to 1964. It also, the UN study left out deforestation in Argentina and fish farming. Those were omitted from the UN FAO report that was analyzed by Goodland and Anhang and brought up to snuff. Let's see, the livestock production, what it does to the Amazonian environment in Brazil in particular, where the land goes barren just after some months. Wow, there was so much I wanted to discuss. Time flies when you're trying to save the world. Coming up on today's program, by the way, we have... Will Anderson, the author of This Is Hope, Green Vegans and the New Human Ecology, and Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com, Twitter, at GoVeganRadio. Glad you can join us today. We are nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network after 12 inexplicable years of broadcasting, including being on the Air America Radio Network, CBS, and Clear Channel radio stations. We are the voice of veganism infiltrating the mainstream media. You can support us with a tax-deductible donation at GoVeganRadio.com. Click donate or make your check payable to Go Vegan Radio, P.O. Box 475-414, San Francisco 94147. And you can advertise your vegan and cruelty-free products and services by emailing me, Bob, at GoVeganRadio.com. And today I am honored to have the author of a very important book, brilliantly written. I would say that this is probably qualifies as one of the most important books of the 21st century, called This Is Hope, Green Vegans and the New Human Ecology. And it comes from Will Anderson, who is an environmentalist and species rights professional who for 30 plus years has conducted campaigns while employed for regional and national organizations. And he most recently founded Green Vegans. Welcome to Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. How are you today, Will?
I'm well, Bob. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us here today. So there's really so much about your book. It is so well written with great metaphors and analogies and all, but maybe you should first bring us to an understanding of what you mean by human ecology and new human ecology and our relationship with environment and culture and economics and where we've been, where we've gone wrong, what we better do. Well, we can go all over the place, but start us off with the background here.
Well, that's what human ecology does. It goes all over the place because it includes everything we do. And all the important issues, from overpopulation to economic systems that destroy ecosystems and the lives of people, human, social, and economic justice that in turn can, if not supported, destroy ecosystems. All these things are wound together and created by the things that we choose to do, by our behavior. And so the basic definition of human ecology is the relationships we create with our external environment through our behavior. So the choices we make result in the world that we see around us. And all the problems that we see can be solved, and that's where I get to the end about hope, can be solved by changing our behavior. But the most important thing is that our behaviors, like ecosystems, are all interrelated in their cause and effect. One supports and interacts with several different other subject matters. For instance, you know, if I spend money, I cause all kinds of things to happen. Things I don't see or hear or feel. And so human ecology is my attempt to, is a discipline that I attempt to hijack a little bit to bring forth the importance of veganism, but also several other issues that veganism needs and veganism makes possible.
So you say that human ecology helps us understand our historic and current human ecosystem relationships and outcomes, and we're getting a bad report card from Mother Earth right now. We're very much in distress, and you talk about mega presence and economic predation. And also, you talk about species rights, too. You don't say animal rights. You're talking species rights?
Yes. I think it's really important that we expand the concept of rights for individuals from other species. And if we say species rights, we include not only the sentient, or at least as far as we can tell, that are more sentient than others, sentient species, but also the non-sentient and their ecosystems, because sentient species depend upon them for their very survival and for their quality of life. But species rights encompasses people and individuals from other species, and by necessity includes ecosystems as well.
So talk a bit about mega presence and economic predation.
Okay, this is something I had to bring up. Think of environmental impact, which we can all, I think, grasp pretty easily. But there's an aspect of environmental impact that environmentalists and a lot of us aren't considering. And that is, you know, our formal roles as hunters, trappers, fishers, pastoralists, all of that has been replaced by a far larger predation that we are creating every day, and even those of us who are vegan. And I've called that neo-predation. In other words, it's a new kind of predation that is far larger and far more impacting than anything our ancestors have done in the past. So neo-predation consists of three elements which overlap a lot. First, it's mega. Mega means that there are just so many of us doing things every day, creating relationships with our environment every day, that everything our species does is mega in scale. If 7.2 billion of us go out and cut a tree, there are 7.2 billion trees cut, and you've lost an ecosystem. And the second part, after mega, is presence. Presence means that all 7.2 billion of us are taking up space with our homes, with our activities, with our noise, with our cars. We displace other species, and we have to alter the ecosystems in which we take up that space. And so we're causing harm and disruption to other species just by our mere presence in place. And it can be increased or decreased by the kinds of activity that we do. So, you know, the Navy's broadcasting phenomenal energy in the form of sonar into the ocean. And this goes across ocean basins. So, you know, our presence predation can be very small and local, but it can also extend outward. And, of course, the big predation is economic predation. And economic predation is the one we can perhaps most readily think of as being something we're becoming more and more aware of. And our economic predation, well, how we spend our money, what we choose to buy, and what we do with it afterwards, are also a form of predation. In other words, all these things are mega presence economic predation. This neo-predation is creating havoc across the entire globe. It's destroying individuals within those ecosystems, along with the ecosystems they need to survive, and our future, which we also need to survive, where we are essentially reaching out across the globe by our mere presence in our consumption in such large numbers that no agency, no group, no organization can possibly hope to counter the outcome, which none of us would like to think about, unless we change that predation. And at the same time, we have to recognize that this hunter-fisher pastoralist model, for goodness sake, you know, people are thinking we can do both at the same time, that the current predation of hunter-fisher pastoralist and this neo-predation at the same time. It's a double whammy on the earth. So I'm calling for the first thing is to eliminate all of animal agriculture. All of the hunting, all the trapping, all the fishing, for starting first with the first billion most wealthiest individuals like us, and then spreading throughout the world. And we eliminate that, and we look at our neo-predation, and we reduce that phenomenally by reducing our population and the way we live our individual lives, how we consume. That's the long version.
Well, we're talking to Will Anderson. His book is This Is Hope, Green Vegans and the New Human Ecology. And I'll second that emotion on, everything that you just wanted to ban and stop, including all animal agriculture. And you talk about avoiding future tragedy. If we don't end animal agriculture, what future tragedy do you envision? What's in store for us?
Well, right now, just about across the board, we can look at what we've done already. And before we had the technology of today, we in the North American continent have eliminated 98 to 99% of prairie ecosystems. And, of course, we did that for animal agriculture to create all that food to feed animals for slaughter in this country. So we've decimated the entire middle section of the North American continent. And in doing so, we have also created this new problem, which is global warming. There's a debate between 36 and 51% of global greenhouse gas emissions emanate from emissions associated with and caused directly by animal agriculture.
Well, I'm going with the World Watch Institute and the World Bank climate scientists who are saying actually at least 51% of greenhouse gas emissions are caused by land-based animal agriculture. That's what I'm hearing from them. They're saying at least 51%, and we're also looking at the comparison between the 18% and the 51%, and why it was underestimated. And I hope to have Robert Goodland, one of the authors from the World Bank, on the program to discuss that in the future. But you know, the 18% is the FAO is influenced by animal agriculture. It's time for a break, but we will continue with Will Anderson and to talk about his great book, a must read. This is Hope Green Vegans. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Lind and GoVeganRadio.com. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. And we are talking today with Will Anderson, the author of This Is Hope, Green Vegans and the New Human Ecology, as we are on the eve of yet another climate conference. And Mother Earth is giving us a really bad report card in our relationship with the ecology. The people in the Philippines know that, and today in Vietnam, where another massive storm has hit. Will, you and I both would like the world to go vegan tomorrow and end animal agriculture. But in your book, you talk about the problems created by our worldviews, those being cultural and religious, and those views never really see the light of public debate. And you know, so maybe we can shed some light on the taboo subject matter, and also maybe we'll get into the global norms, the norms of behavior, the people not wanting to buck the system and having no objective comparison to what they're actually doing. So they don't know that they're not even thinking about going vegan because they don't know anything, about it. They don't know the harm they're causing,
It's frustrating. And when I first started writing this book, I thought I had a pretty good handle on, the environmental state of the earth and somewhat on the state of humanity as well, as far as poverty goes. But as time went on doing the research, I was just floored by the fact that 8 out of 10 ocean basins, when considered, they're phytoplankton, which is the very base of the food chain. The phytoplankton are decreasing 1% per year. So the very foundation of the oceanic ecosystem is declining 1% of a year. And that was just the tip of a few icebergs that we may have left
that are melting away. The tip of remembering icebergs.
But our norms. That's what we're struggling with. What's normal? What are the things that we do? We take for granted that we do automatically and use because they're very handy. We don't have to think about what we do each time. We just go ahead and do it. But those norms are difficult to observe objectively because we live within them. And when we hear somebody else's opinion, if we're open-minded, we may consider that opinion, but it seldom does it change our norm of understanding, nor our worldview, which is, how we perceive ourselves in the greater expanse of the universe, in our relationship to it, they're slow to change. Sometimes we can be shocked into changing, but we're up against this time frame, and it's not one that I'm presenting or anybody else. It's the one that's happening on our planet. The biosphere is ticking away and losing its survivability for humans and other species as we talk. And it all sounds doom and gloom, and we all want to turn away from problems that seem to be insurmountable. But that's the very thing we must not do. There is a solution, a variety of solutions, and it's all tied into how we behave and the decisions we make. And, you know, veganism is the underappreciated element in all of this. It's underappreciated in fish and wildlife management, underappreciated in, if at all, in the environmental community, underappreciated in global aid programs, and underappreciated, at least in practice, you know, by the global scientific community. You know, they can all write papers, but few of them are acting on it. Few of them are calling. I mean, just review environmental organizations and their websites. The Center for Global Diversity, biological diversity, I should say, you know, calls for a lower human population, but go to the rest of the websites.
Time for another break, but we'll continue with Will Anderson. We're taking another break now. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. Once again, welcome to the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Yes, we've expanded to 2 hours now. We're live Sundays from 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific time. You can hear us live. You can go to goveganradio.com and click listen live or wait for the archive there. And while you're there, why not click donate and make a tax-deductible donation? Help us in our quest to purchase the airtime to be on WWRL in New York City and WCPT in Chicago, two stations that used to carry the program when we were on Air America. Remember, we have to purchase airtime. Free speech is expensive. The animals would pay, but they're paying with their lives. And there is a sense of urgency about going vegan. And you sacrifice nothing, by the way. By going vegan, we have the best food, you know. Vegans are foodies. I just should refer you to Vegetarian House, a 100% vegan restaurant in San Jose, 520 East Santa Clara Street. The website is vegetarianhouse.us. And it has become very popular for catering around the Bay Area, very in demand for weddings and corporate functions. And I suggest you just look at the menu and you'll see, well, this is no sacrifice. This is delicious. This is the way I want to eat. This is what saves animals and certainly related to human health and saving the environment. VegetarianHouse.us. Just check out the menu and see, oh, you're not sacrificing anything except, you know, the tumor, you know. So we're talking today to Will Anderson. His book is This Is Hope, Green Vegans and the New Human Ecology. He and I both sharing a sense of urgency about going vegan, it being the only way to save the planet. It's true. We have World Watch environmental experts who are telling us that it's the only practical way, because everything else would require infrastructure. We'd you know, I mean, you want to change over to renewable everything? Okay, 20 years, $18 trillion, you got it. Or we can save the planet and go vegan. Seems like an easy enough choice to make, but, you know, Will, it seems like just when we were talking about the global norms and the cultural views, unfortunately, there's the view that animals are here for us to use and, you know, we can do what we want. And that stands in the way in a large respect to the vegan world that we need to, you know, to save ourselves.
And, every culture has a worldview in which they have an explanation of our relationships with individuals from other species, and also explanations on how we have a right to kill them, even when it's not necessary for survival. These are all outdated, arcane belief systems, or at least aspects of cultures that are arcane, that are so slow to change. And they're slow because they aren't keeping up with the change we are creating in the environment in which we live. Species can't adapt, and now, strangely enough, we are finding that we are on the edge of this great cataclysm in which we ourselves won't be able to adapt to the very earth conditions we have created. And, you know, it's really my hope that environmentalists will wake up to the fact that they cannot stop the loss of biodiversity or save ecosystems until we have a vegan human ecology. And it's my hope that scientists and fish and wildlife management has the same light go on in their heads and in their hearts, that we have this opportunity to turn things around and salvage what's left. We can't bring back the species we've lost, the species that are we're losing at 10,000 times to extinction, 10,000 times the background rate that we would normally find if humans were not here. If we can convince them and to understand and make them understand that veganism is essential to the things, to preserving the things that they love most, and maybe we'll have some momentum built up to get us to where we need to be in a much shorter time.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's preserving life itself. I mean, you say in the book, really, everyone is relying on us to do whatever it takes to preserve life. And what that means is we have to go vegan. Do you want to preserve life? We have to go vegan. I mean, that's everything points to that. And I think we need to get past denying it. And there are many ways that we do deny it. And I must say, I'm very happy that in your book you address certain topics, which really are important. You say, well, the most important dilemma, problems with flawed choices. And you know, a lot of people think that if they eat their animal flesh, you know, that's labeled local, organic, grass-fed, you know, claiming environmental sustainability and humane, that it's that way. But it is not that way. And we have people like Michael Pollan to thank for our dilemma.
Yeah, you'll notice a lot of the more popular books, from the Paleo Diet to Michael Pollan's Omnivore's Dilemma, they offer the easiest non-solutions. You know, they make people feel good about what they're doing without actually solving the problem. And we've known it in the past in the environmental movement as greenwashing, where you may address a few small items, but the major issues and major problems about the product or service or behavior remain. And we're seeing this in Michael Pollan's book, Omnivore's Dilemma. He greenwashes, sustainability washes, and humane washes us all the way through his book. And I've posted this on my blog, but it's really aggravating to see people like Michael Pollan come to some great conclusions and great premises, starting with some great premises. But in the middle of it all, he sabotages it with unfounded assumptions about ecology that lead him to the conclusion that we can continue to kill animals only in small numbers and everything will be just fine, that we can continue animal agriculture on a small scale and everything will be fine. And he's wrong on so many levels. And he's arrogantly dismissive towards vegans in his book as well. But Michael Pollan figures some important things out about monocultures and grain-fed agriculture. But he's sucked into the myth of small-scale animal culture as being a solution for anybody, any individual from another species, or environmentally for the planet. And he's done a great deal of damage, a great deal of harm across this whole movement that we're trying to create. And he's creating incredible excuses for people to not go vegan, actually. It's a huge myth that he's part of perpetuating, along with Whole Foods and other organizations, as you have pointed out in some of your postings.
Yes, and on air, the Humane Society of the United States, is promoting this. And as it turns out, it seems that grass-fed animals, the pasture-fed, grass-fed, produce up to 400% the methane of factory farmed animals. So oddly enough, if you're an environmentalist, you have to choose factory farms over grass fed, which is a bizarre choice to have to make because it's not a reasonable choice. And then the impact on resources. I mean, just the idea of calling any animal agriculture sustainable is really criminal. And Michael Pollan there also. I mean, you say like the way he paints with words and he says, the animals are in an intricate dance and that they are prosperous beings. I mean, really misleading us into thinking that the animals have it better than they do.
Yeah, he leads us into the norms. He doesn't break through his own worldview that individuals from other species are here for us to use and abuse as we like. And he doesn't even bother to use science about the cognitive and physical experiences that are indicated by science as they are being slaughtered, as they're being killed, as they're being had their necks broken, and their throats slit open. He doesn't get ecosystems. He doesn't understand, apparently, or if he doesn't wish to understand, the environmental impacts of what he's telling his readers. It's really frustrating because I'm the man's smart. He's well read. He writes well, but his goal, it appears, is to continue with the type of gluttony that people across the planet with a lot of money seem to savor on to the end of the earth. And it's I just hope that he wakes up to this, because there are some leading cultural figures like himself who are leading us astray, and I just wish he'd wake up.
Well, people seem to certainly want to stay comfortably numb in the norms. In the book, you say, equally blind. We can do something as a culture, a nation, or a species, and not realize it if we all remain equally blind. And that seems to be part of the system, and he's part of it.
Absolutely. I'm hoping that people who are vegans, for whatever reason, whether it's health or the environment or a number of issues, I hope they realize how essential it is as a force, a power, to change the course of history. Our place on this earth and our future are entirely dependent, and I say this without exaggeration and intentionally, it's entirely dependent upon us achieving at least 7 results that define a new human ecology. And, the 7 briefly are: we need healthy, intact ecosystems. that dominate local landscapes.
Stay with me. Stay with me for one more segment, and we'll get into the seven results with Will Anderson. We'll continue. His book is This Is Hope, Green Vegans, and the New Human Ecology. If you've missed any of our interview, the program will be archived at goveganradio.com, where you can make a tax-deductible donation.
I have.
It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com on Twitter at GoVeganRadio. There's also a GoVegan Radio with Bob Linden Facebook page and a couple of Bob Linden pages and Be My Friend. Talking to our friend today, Will Anderson, the author of the book This Is Hope, Green Vegans and the New Human Ecology. We are really at crisis stage, and we both recognize sense of urgency in the need for the world to go vegan. We are just affecting other species and the planet, and it was sad to see in your book the story of a beached whale in the Seattle area some years ago. And you know, you look at the effect that we're having on the population there. And we sometimes wonder, oh, why are the whales beaching themselves? What's wrong? Well, how about their nutrition? Because in the whale were sweatpants and golf balls, not regular parts of the whale's diet. Also found were 20 plastic bags, surgical gloves, towels, and duct tape. So, we are just destroying the earth, and the most destructive force is the consumption of meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. Will, you were going to talk about seven results that we are seeking by our going vegan in the new human ecology. Was that correct?
Yes. In 2010, in Russia, there were 26,000 fires that destroyed 26% of the world's wheat crop, and they export a lot of that. Food prices around the world rose. And there's an 80% statistical likelihood that that drought in which those fires occurred was caused by global warming. That global warming is caused in large part by animal agriculture. If we can see the connections and understand how important it is to achieve seven results, we'll start to understand the role that veganism plays.
Do a countdown.
Along with some other issues.
Let's hear the countdown of seven, yeah.
Yes, the countdown of seven. Healthy, intact ecosystems that dominate global landscapes and seascapes. A vegan, organic, or veganic and humane consumer lifestyle oriented to sustainable efficiencies and relationships. And number three is social and economic justice for all with transparency in public and corporate institutions. The next is an immediate and negative impact population growth based on natural attrition. In other words, our consumption rate drops. Economic systems that are ecologically sustainable and restorative enable social and economic justice and operate within the new human ecology. And an increase in empathy, love, and compassion towards all beings and ecosystems. Appropriate, sustainable, and equitable consumption of goods and services. Those seven things, if we achieve them, will take care of the majority of our environmental problems and human poverty.
All based in going vegan. I don't know, maybe we have a couple of minutes left, but I would like you to tell us what lumps are.
I was a survival instructor in the Air Force long ago, and in the wintertime, we would take students to the field, and they would have to build a fire in the snow and try and stay warm. And they would have to go out and, of course, get wood. And this wood, as you would expect, was moist and wet and very smoky. Well, once they would get the fire started, I'd stand off to the side and watch them use up the wood that they had. But they were all too cold. to go away from the fire, to get more wood, because you need a fire to dry out some of the wood before you put it back on the fire to reduce the smoke and get a hotter fire. Well, we called them lumps because they'd stand around, and affectionately, because they would stand around the fire like lumps and not go into the forest and pick up twigs and wood, bring it back to the fire so everybody would benefit by a warmer, less smoky fire. But it would usually take a direct order from the highest ranking person in the group to order people that they could not stand by the fire and use its warmth unless they continually took turns bringing back and doing their share, bringing back the wood for that fire, which everybody needed to survive. And so we live in a world that's much the same way. If we do not wake up to our responsibilities and act on them, and we're doing this, you know, imperfectly.
We have to do our share, which means, you know, it's not enough that I went vegan and you went vegan. Whoever's listening right now has to go vegan and encourage others too. Thanks for being with us today. Will Anderson, is there a website?
This is hopethebook.com and greenvegans.org.
Thanks so much for being with us today. Will Anderson on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden.
These days...
It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. You can tweet with us on Twitter, at Go Vegan Radio. And, by the way, my disclaimer is that I am not responsible for all the network spots that run when we're not in the midst of our program here. So that's part of the arrangement. We trade spots and that we're on the air on the Genesis Communications Network. My next guest is with us on a weekly basis with Animal Rights Commentary with Professor Gary Francione. He is the first academic to teach animal rights theory at an American law school. He's at Rutgers University. The website abolitionistapproach.com, and his latest book is Eat Like You Care, An Examination of the Morality of Eating Animals. There is no morality to eating animals, from what I understand. So what? That would be a one-page book, right? No morality, Gary?
Well, more or less, Bob, but you know, we need a little bit of detail. Actually, the structure of the book is to try to sort of provide the various things that people throw at you when you're trying to explain to them the impeccable and irrefutable logic of diet. And the sorts of
it's
things...
It's terrible to be right all the time, Gary.
I know. It's a burden, Bob. That's right. It's a burden. It's a real burden. I'm just looking at... tonight, you know, Bob, I was at Whole Foods. I have to go there. It's a shame because all of the smaller health food stores have now been closed in my area as a result of the emergence on the scene of Whole Foods and Trader Joe's, and so all of them are closed. So I had to go over to Whole Foods tonight, and there was a sign outside. I'm looking at the sign now. Actually, not the sign, but a picture of the sign. One-day deal this Friday only, November 15th. USA New York strip steaks, $9.99. Regularly $17 a pound, so you're saving $8. And there's
not
a sticker.
There's
a sticker, Global Animal Partnership, Animal Welfare Rating 1. No cages, no crates, no crowding. This is on the sign, which is outside Whole Foods, which everybody who walks in sees. I mean, you can't miss it. It's right there by the entrance door. And it's just shocking to me. I'm sorry. I still can't get over the fact that the Global Animal Partnership has on its board of directors. The Global Animal Partnership is the group that provides these animal welfare ratings, which Whole Foods uses. And on the board of directors is Wayne Pissell from HSUS, and one of the staff members is Mayun Park, the former president of Compassion Over Killing. And it just troubles me that and that we have HSUS and PETA and Vegan Outreach and Farm Sanctuary and Compassion Over Killing and Mercy for Animals and all of these groups supporting the happy exploitation program of Whole Foods in publicly doing that in writing. And that people are walking in and seeing the Global Animal Partnership puts its stamp of approval. It's animal welfare rate level one. Interestingly, not that it really matters, but level one is no crowding. Level two is enriched environment. Level three is pasture centered. Level four is animal centered. No physical alterations. I guess that means mutilations. Step five, animal centered. Entire life on the same farm. So those are the five steps for cattle. And this is step one, no crowding. So they haven't even gotten step two, three, step two, three, right? It goes from one, two, four, five, and five plus. I don't know where three is. There is no step three for cattle, apparently.
You go from two to four, like skip.
Yeah, it goes from two to four, and then five plus. So it's not six, it's five plus, and there's no three. These people are confused on multiple levels. But
they can't count to five, you know, and we expect them to take care of animals. They can't count to five.
Exactly. Okay. But it's troubling to me that people are walking in and they're seeing this. And this is a stamp of approval. Make no mistake about it. This is a stamp of approval from these organizations on this meat, on these dead animals. And they're being told, here's a stamp of approval from animal people. The animal people have put their stamp of approval on Whole Foods and on this meat. And I think it's despicable. I really do. It really troubles me. But, you know, this week I also saw on the Vegan Outreach Facebook.
The animals in the deli case aren't doing so well. I mean, they talk about, by the way, I noticed, you know, they do talk about the five-step and how well the animals do. But I happen to notice all the animals in the deli case not doing very well.
That's right. They're all dead.
And, they're all dead.
And so Vegan Outreach put on its Facebook site this week that their position is veganism is not about personal purity, but a way to stop suffering. You don't have to avoid every animal product, just the obvious ones for which an animal was bred, raised, and eventually killed. Some vegans avoid all they can as a symbolic gesture, but minuscule amounts of animal products or byproducts will fade away as the meat, dairy, and egg industries fade. So basically, it's, hey, you know, you don't have to avoid everything. Don't worry about it. It's not a matter of personal purity. I mean, think about how that would sound. If we were talking about a human rights issue, think about how it would sound if we were talking about child molestation or about violence against women or one of the many, many issues that afflict our world and that don't seem to be getting any better. As a matter of fact, rape seems to be getting worse. Child molestation is reached epidemic proportions. And so let's imagine, you know, people saying, look, you don't have to be, and it's not a matter of personal purity. You don't have to avoid everything. You know, just like sort of try to avoid the obvious stuff, but don't sweat the details. It's appalling.
It's mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing. It's basically saying, if you're a vegan, you don't have to be vegan. That's fine. Right? I mean,
That's exactly what it's saying. And what it's saying is, if you're a vegan, you're extreme, and that you're involved in a quest for personal purity. It's not a question that you take your moral issues and principles seriously. That's not what we're talking about. It's a matter of purity. It's denigrated by animal people. Veganism is denigrated by animal people. And, you know, I actually don't see being a vegan as extreme. In any way whatsoever, I think
it's perfectly normal. It's normal. It's easy. It's easy and normal. And you know, Gary, I've been attacked this way also on Facebook by people saying to me, you know, it's not about purity. It's about pragmatism.
Exactly. And you know what is really troubling to me is that that's such a cop out. That is just such an incredible cop out, and it's so intellectually dishonest. It's so intellectually dishonest. I mean, what we need to be doing is being clear that there's no moral justification for eating, wearing, or using animal products. People will make their own decisions. If they decide they want to do something short of going vegan, let them make that decision. What is troubling to me is that you have the animal people who are making a living off of the backs of the suffering of those animals. They're making a living. There's a lot of those folks out there, a lot of folks out there who are making a living off of the suffering and death of non-human animals, and they're busy saying, hey, it's fine. Don't be a purist. Don't be an extremist. You know, don't worry about it. It's okay. Go shop at Whole Foods. Here's Wayne Pacell putting his stamp of approval on these New York strip steaks. Hey, you can save $8 a pound on them. And here's Vegan Outreach saying, you don't have to be vegan. Here's PETA saying, Bell and Evans is setting a whole new industry standard for chicken. We talked about that last week. Here's Farm Sanctuary, Mercy for Animals, Compassion Over Killing, all signing a public statement that expresses their appreciation and support for the.
I do have to ask them if they. I have to ask them if they still feel that way or if they regret having signed that. You know, I mean,
well,
that's like.
Well, you know, Bob, yeah. I wish you would because. I have no reason to believe. I mean, I raised this issue when they were sitting there at the so-called Animal Non-Rights 2013 National Conference in June. I raised this issue. They were all sitting there. I mean, Nathan Runkle from Mercy for Animals was sitting there. Nick Cooney and Bruce Friedrich were sitting there from Farm Sanctuary. They were defending Whole Foods. Bruce Friedrich was defending Whole Foods. Was saying that it was showing how we were making progress.
It makes me wonder, you know, if someone like Vegan Outreach can say, you know, like don't be vegan and HSUS. These people are who elected them, and you know they seem like self-appointed, unelected, really incapable spokespeople for the cause. I mean, I really...
Well, it depends what cause we're talking about here. If what we're talking about is their cause, if what we're talking about is their business or their businesses, then I guess they're the best spokespersons for that.
But if they're called Vegan Outreach... They're called Vegan Outreach, and I'm just, you know, it's just so shocking because they're called Vegan Outreach, and they say, you know, don't worry if you're consuming some animal ingredients.
Well, you know, Bob, this isn't all that terribly new because Matt Ball and the folks over at Vegan Outreach have been now for a number of years saying it's not a matter of personal purity. It's not a question of which things you can't eat or, you know, that you can or can't eat. It's not a question of keeping a list of ingredients. It's a question of reducing suffering. That's really, they've been saying that. In all fairness, they've been saying that. I mean, I think it's getting worse. The amplification's been turned up in the past, I don't know, five years, I would say. But, I mean, but certainly in the past couple of years. But, you know,
It's amazing that they say, so the quote is, you don't have to avoid every animal product, just the obvious ones for which an animal was bred, raised, and eventually killed. But that's all animal products.
Well, one would think, well, you know, I guess what they're talking about is dairy and eggs. I don't know what they're talking. I mean, you know.
Well, they're still all. Still, nobody gets out alive. Nobody gets out alive.
Obviously, I mean, but maybe they think those things are not quite as obvious as meat. I really don't know what these folks are thinking.
What do they mean?
I don't think that there's any really sort of consistency or interest in being consistent.
Do you need to go, or you want to stay around longer, or do you have to go? Okay, Gary Francione continuing on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden coming up next. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. I promise next week I will get back to the story that I started earlier in the show about, you know, the increasing irrelevance of the Keystone XL debate, the insignificant contribution to climate change of the pipeline. Therefore, we should be devoting our time to promoting veganism to combat climate change. We'll also continue talking about the flawed UN report that blamed animal agriculture for 18% of all greenhouse gas emissions and why it should actually read 51%, at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions caused by animal agriculture. And, you know, it's, again, you're not sacrificing anything to go vegan. We have the best food. Check out Viva La Vegan Grocery, VivaLaVeganGrocery.com. The store in Rancho Cucamonga with over 6,000 vegan items and the new location in Santa Monica at Ocean Park and 28th. Viva La Vegan. And for vegan events around the San Francisco Bay Area, check out the website of the San Francisco Vegetarian Society, sfvs.org. If you go to that website and you click on the World Veg Fest, V-E-G, the World Veg Fest there, you can see my video that was from this year, Humane Meat, and the Compromise of Animal Advocacy. We're talking to Professor Gary Francione. Once again this week, I was accused of being divisive by criticizing the Humane Society of the United States. And we're talking about vegan outreach, and I don't know what qualifies people who seem self-elected to represent a vegan cause. HSUS has, you know, a pig farmer vice president who kills 50,000 animals per year and, you know, profits from that. $30 more per pig because they're humane. And vegan outreach, as Professor Francione says, just put out, you know, a letter. Hey, no need to worry about, you know, vegan products, vegan ingredients. You know, don't be such a stickler. Don't be so pure. Some vegans avoid all they can as a symbolic gesture, Professor Francione, but minuscule amounts of animal products or byproducts will fade away as the meat, dairy, and egg industries fade, which is never. So those products will always be there. And, you know, one bite of, you know, a burger. Yeah, I mean, you could get mad cow disease from a minuscule amount, or who knows what sort of infection, you know? I mean, it's like a minuscule amount. What does that mean?
Well, it means that we don't have to be vegans. I guess that's what it means. But yeah, it is what's remarkable to me is that when you criticize that sort of position, Bob, the response always is, "Well, you're being divisive." Well, to accuse someone of being divisive suggests that there's a unity that this person is dividing, and I would respectfully suggest that. I can only speak for myself, but I would guess I speak for you as well, that whatever
you are,
I know
what's coming.
Whatever movement they're a part of, you and I aren't part of it. And,
exactly. I say, divide me from them. I am not part of whatever they're a part of doing.
Exactly.
I'm not there.
Exactly not. You know, look, I mean, I think that their marketing ideas are on point in the sense that people don't want, you know, it's, people want to be told they're doing the right thing without having to do much. I mean, think about it. I mean, this is really common sense. People want to be told that they're doing the right thing without making any significant changes in their lives. And that's exactly what these organizations are doing. They're saying, look, you can be, you know, you can do right by animals. You can discharge your moral obligations to animals by going to Whole Foods, and you can buy the strip steak. And, you know, you can save $8 at the same time, and you can buy, you know, happy strip steaks, and you can buy cage-free eggs, and you can buy crate-free pork, and you can buy organic milk and all of this sort of stuff. And you can be, you're doing the right thing because you're reducing suffering. You know, what's interesting to me is that, it's only when you're talking to animal people that people get confused about this. I was recently at a magnificent art exhibition in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, in Dickinson College, in Carlisle. Succo, who is probably the, I can't think of a political social justice artist that is more talented than Sue is. But she, you know, she's focused on a number of issues, including animal exploitation. And she had a an exhibition at the college at the Trout Gallery.
That's Succo, Sue, C-O-E. I guess we're out of time. We run out of time.
Oh, my. We'll pick up on this next week because I want to talk about Succo's exhibit. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Thank you, Professor Francione. Thanks for listening. GoVeganRadio.com.